Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Lawrence Drink is back with us today to host the show, and he has some special guests coming on. Lawrence Drink, also known as Faki Lee, also known as the founder of A Few Good Programs, Each One Teach One, and I'll let Lawrence tell you the rest. Lawrence, are you on?
I'm on. Can you hear me?
Yeah, the show is yours. Yes, thank you very much, and I will let you talk. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So my name is Lawrence Strank. I'm the founder of Legacy Programs Education Reentry. We are one in a million programs. We are for us, by us, about us, but we also include the family members and the communities, and we try to unite. We work with everybody and anybody as long as you have the same vision. We have a wonderful staff. We have a great secretary that maintains the appointments and website and pretty much one of the backbones of this program and organization. And like I say, we just ask anybody that wants to join or get in on the projects. We have cards for the incarcerated. We have a mentor program. We have a crisis hotline. And if you want to check it out, look it up on legacyprograms.net. So, and we're doing big things. We're doing things for the communities, for the families, and for the incarcerated, and for the ones that are coming out that are struggling and that just need guidance and assistance. And we don't do things with them. We do things side by side. We don't just instruct them how to do things. So, and we have a special guest today. Dan, are you on? 916? So, can you hear me, Leona? Leona, can you hear me?
Hello?
Oh. Yeah, I'm am I coming across right? Is my microphone working?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So, we have a special guest today, Dan, and he we've known each other since 2004. We served time on a high security level 4. And we've both been able to change our lives. He is a former LWOP. He was told he was never getting out of prison. He was told that he would never see the light of day. And this man has overcome so much where he got the life sentence, the life without possibility parole lifted. He got pardoned. I forget the actual word for it. And he that later that year, he went up for a board of parole hearings, and he got out on his first hearing. So this man has really done something for himself. And today, he just recently got an out-of-state transfer. He's in Arizona right now, and he's doing his thing. So, and I also want to take a special moment for the fathers out there, and not just the fathers out here, but the fathers behind the walls especially. And I wanted to dedicate everything I did today to those men behind the walls that are fathers and stepfathers, and that I want to let you guys know you are not forgotten, and you guys are a big deal out here still. So, you know, just because you're locked up doesn't mean you can't be a father figure. So, Dan, are you on yet? Okay. So that was my special guest today. I guess he's having issues getting on. Leona, is he logged on yet?
Bro, I'm here.
Dan?
Bro, it's your brother.
Oh, hey, brother. How you doing? How you been?
That was me.
Oh, okay. No, I'm waiting for Dan to come on. Leona, is 916 on yet?
No, 626-626-805. And I wanted to ask Brady, what is your first name, Brady?
I go by the letter T, but... Tommy.
Oh, you know why? Because we have, well, in Boston, he's now, I think he left the Patriots. I mean, I believe it was. Anyway, Tom Brady, he's a well-known football player. And
No, you didn't, Leona. Oh, my goodness. That's so funny.
He is Tom Brady. Everybody in Boston, he's a major figure in Massachusetts because he is from the Irish community, and he's been in football for years. And But when I heard your name, and I believe Dan is on with us now, so I'm going to unmute him. He just came in, and the blue light. Okay, he's all yours. Everything's take over.
Thank you, Dan. How you there?
What's up, dude?
My brother, country. How you doing?
Have a good day. How's everything?
I'm blessed, man. It's my first Father's Day's out, so I'm enjoying it. I'm playing video games and everything else. It's like a second birthday.
I'm getting run over. It's okay.
Yeah. So I introduced you, but why don't you tell everybody about yourself? Where you come from? How you know our history?
Oh shoot. I was in California for 25 years, doing a nice little stint. I had life without. Met old Breezy at Salinas Valley back in 2003.
Something like that.
So
yeah.
He's probably the oldest friend I have from inside, which is cool. And now we're just out having fun. We're doing what we're supposed to be doing. I'm no longer in California. They transferred parole out to Arizona. So I'm out here in Arizona seeing the entire state. It's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Dan, why don't you tell everybody about the process of going in, doing so much time? Because I think we did, 20-something years together? Or almost 20 years?
Yes,
so what was the process of going through with life without, with no hope, and then coming out and now having what you have? Like, can you walk us through that process?
Shit. Let me see. 20 years, I was 20 years old when I fell. So I was still a youngster. I didn't care. Didn't have any concept of what reality was. So if you had money, it was mine. I'm going to take it any way possible. And I ended up getting a life without the possibility of parole sentence for it. I screwed up. But the problem was for 15 years, it was about 11 years after I got arrested, that I still had the same mentality. I still drank every day. I still wanted to fight. I still wanted to do stupid things. And it was just, that's who I was until somebody, you know, said they believed I could be something more. And, from point A to point B, it took a long time of change, long time of looking at who I was, looking at who I really was. I found Christ. Basically, I wouldn't be out here without him. I put my nose to the ground. I hit groups, 40 hours of groups a week, 40 hours of work a week. And then I'd have 40 hours to myself, which is mostly of sleep or sports. I become content that I was going to be in there for the rest of my life. A cop kept walking by and handing me a paper saying, fill it out. And this is, 2015, she started doing that. She just walked up, fill out this. I kept laughing because it was a commutation pack, and I told her, hey, nobody ever gets that crap. So we just kept going like that, and then finally in 2018, Al called me a chicken, saying that I would never do it and I should just throw it in the trash. And then he double dog dared me, so I filled it out and sent it in. Yeah, kind of bad. But the thing is that I've worked on myself so long that I understood who I was. I understood what caused me to think the way that I did. I understood my causative factors. And Governor Brown, Christmas Eve, gave me a commutation from life without to life with, 25 to life. And went to board July 30th, 2019, was found suitable by one of the hardest commissioners there is. And then Christmas Eve of 2019, Gavin Newsom said, go home. And I went home a week later on New Year's Eve.
Wow.
Getting out, it was difficult because I had to adapt to a whole new society. I had never played with a cell phone. I'm still stuck on it. I have no idea how to use a computer still. I got my driver's license 9 days after I got out. I mean, I walked in, I said, I want to get a renewal on my license. I didn't have to take a test. They just renewed my license. Went through the transition of 6 months, probably the best 6 months that I've had, because it got me on my feet to where I needed to be. Ended up getting an apartment. I got a union job with traffic control, moved on. Finally was told I can move out to Arizona with family I had not been around in 27 years. And on my birthday this year, I got the call, and they said that I got the clearance, and I should be out there by April 8th. So I left, came out here to Arizona. It was hard for the first month because Arizona still believes in that if you're a convict, we really don't want you working for us. I got a job working for pavement striping, and now I get to travel around the entire state, stay in hotels Monday through Thursday. I make a good living, and, you know, I try to give back as much as I can.
Nice. And I remember when you got that commutation. I remember when you were a big inspiration for a lot of us, especially for a lot of the life without. So, I mean, Smokey, you lived with Smokes for a while. I mean, that was one of my greatest mentors right there.
Hell yeah.
So, man, I just love your story. And I remember you were like when we used to talk about you, it was always, well, if they could do it for country, they could do it for anybody. because you left fairly before, I think I was getting transferred out to CRC during the time.
Yeah.
But,
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I love our story. I love tell everybody the prison we were at. I mean, Salinas Valley.
That's where Breeze learned he cannot play fantasy football. That prison was horrible. The first 2 years I was there, we had 82 days of program. That was it. 82 days of program in 2 years. So people talk about, oh, lockdowns, this. Yeah, no, I went through those lockdowns. One of the cops was caught there dropping the kites to get us all locked down. And it was a sergeant. Hell, at that prison, that's where Captain Cranky was. He's the one who told me he believed in me.
Wow.
And that's where I changed. That's where everything started.
Yeah. And I remember because you used to be heavy in the politics.
Used to be playing all the stupid shit.
Yeah.
And
well, I'm just really proud of you, man.
And now I'm living in a state where right now it's 119 degrees.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
remember those cells?
Hey, it's a lot cooler than it was the other day at 122.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I want to shed a little light on, do you remember how hot it used to get in those cells during the summertime?
Hell yeah, dude, that
Selena
was torture.
In Mill Creek?
That was torture.
Yeah. So hot that the cops used to let us keep our doors open and fans by, you know, the threshold.
Five fans in the cell.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, you'd think that'd be illegal.
Yeah, you would think so. But, no, I just want to shed a little light. So Salinas Valley was built in, I believe,
87.
And was it 87?
Yeah, it was 87.
Oh, okay. Well, I remember because I went in at 2000 and I hit D-yard, the 180, and it was very – we had murders at least once a month there. There were riots. There were – I recall a lot.
I still remember walking a chow that night when old boy got hit 42 times and shot – the boy who was hitting him got shot in the head 3 times with a block gun.
Yep. Yeah, I was there when my boy Shadow got stabbed on the yard, and he almost killed that guy by the steps,
right.
Or by the chair, the bench. but Salinas Valley was not a place. So for your change to start there is pretty big because that was a very political and I believe at the time was the most violent prison in California.
It was. The thing was is that my politics were all based around alcohol. I was the cooker for everybody. And when I quit, people looked at me, and they were trying to figure out why until I told them. And a couple of fellas looked at me and said, all right, no more cooking for you. And it was Christmas Day 2006. I haven't had a drink since.
Nice. Oh, yep. Man. It's so nice
even
talk
out
to
here.
Your country.
Yes. No
even
out
here,
there.
Huh? That's right.
Don't need it. Don't want it.
No,
I enjoy.
Good.
I enjoy what I have now.
Nice. And you're super successful. I mean, for the society to say that you're going to die in prison and then to go through the process and be where you're at now, I mean, it's God, you know?
Oh, most definitely it's God. And God's given me next week marks 18 months for me.
Nice. I'm so proud of you, brother.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But how are you, dude? You doing good?
I appreciate it. You know,
Call of Duty.
Yeah, and so this is just so the audience knows. Me and Country, we play Call of Duty online. And what's fun is that I get my son involved, and so we'll be passing the controller back and forth. And so to have somebody from my past that I've known for so long, and to know his history and to know his story and his success. There's a welcoming feeling of bringing that into my family, and he gets to meet my wife, and he gets to meet my son, and, you know, this is just a very powerful, pivotal moment in my life that, you know, even though we went through the trenches, there's still people back there that are good people, and they're good positive influences on our life.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Almost all my mentors are still in.
Talk about your mentors.
You got Ricardo and Smokey, they're out. Polar Bear's out. But everybody else, they're still in.
Yeah, Baldwin's out.
Oh, yeah, Mike Baldwin, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing big things.
He's
he
out.
Was just doing
he's
his class.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was Life Without as well, wasn't he?
No, he had a lifetime, basically.
Okay.
Just not Life Without. But he was the person who actually got me into my first victims awareness group.
Oh, wow. What'd you learn about victims awareness?
Huh?
What'd you learn about victims awareness, in your words?
Crap. I learned about the screw-ups that I'd done, the harm that I caused to not only my family, the victim's family, but most of all, you know, to God, to my community. That was all phase one. Phase two, I learned how to reconnect. I learned all about restorative justice. Restorative justice is how the world should be. And then phase three was all about us, learning about us, making sure that we are successful when we get out. And if you take it to heart and you follow everything that you're taught in these groups, you will be successful. If you go in just for chrono, too many of those guys kept coming back.
Yeah. Who taught those groups?
Shit. Me, Smokey, Ricardo, Polar Bear. Yeah, dude.
Okay.
Hey, all of us were you. You taught a couple.
Yep.
But, shoot, dude, we were even working with Dr. Babra. Me and Smokey, we worked for her.
Yeah.
But, dude, I'm going to tell you, being out here, it's stressful. I mean, I'm sorry, but I see more hate out here than I ever saw in prison.
Really? Would you like to explain that?
Yeah, all this stupid stuff going on in politics, all this stupid stuff going on in the world right now. Everybody wants to be segregated again, and it's sad. There's way too much hate out here. And people need to just drop all this BS and be one. But no, everybody wants to hate each other. And it's sad because it keeps getting fed every day. And and everybody who knows me knows that I'm a very, very staunch Republican. I don't hold my tongue. I don't play the BS politics game, but when I see something wrong, I speak on it. And when I got here to Arizona, they didn't have a mask requirement. So I could walk into any spot without a mask, no problem. Out there in California, you try that, they try shooting you, they try killing you. They jump you. And it, I mean, it's sad. Over on what, a mask? And then if, when people get vaccinated, they're still wearing masks. It's like, all you're doing is breeding fear. Stop breeding fear. Breed into this country what you want in your life, which is happiness, success, love. Give it back to the country. Give it back to your fellow man. I don't care who you are. I don't care what color you are. I don't care what creed you are, what religion you are. You show me that you're an honorable person, and I will be honorable towards you. You show me otherwise, I will still be honorable towards you. I just won't have anything to do with you.
I like that. Hey, can you tell me about the effects of long-term incarceration as far as the PTSD that comes with it?
Oh, man. fireworks, back, what would they call those on cars?
Backfires?
Yeah, backfires on cars still scare the crap out of me. It's just because you'd hear the gunshot going off, you try to duck and you don't really want to look around, but you want to look around. I still have a problem, even in church. I can't sit in there very long because there's people behind me. I don't like people behind me because I don't know them. I don't trust them. Shoot, my folks thought it was funny and took me into Walmart Supercenter the first day I got out. They wanted to see. Yeah, I was scared to death, dude.
I bet.
My hands white-knuckled on the cart, pushing the cart, and I kept looking like, where am I? What's going on? I still don't sleep very well. I might get 2 or 3 hours of sleep at night. But other than that, I'm doing everything I can to forget about all the BS.
Yeah.
I'll never forget about the people, but I want to forget about the BS. And it's kind of hard when you're out here and the exact same stuff multiplied by 10 is going on.
Wow. That's very insightful, actually. No, I speak about this every week. We have a lot of formerly incarcerated that come on.
Cool.
And we talk about how, we call it PICS, post-incarceration stress syndrome. And so how much the government's going to have to pay to rehabilitate us, not just while we're in prison, but when we come out, because we're kind of handicapped, you know? And so the same things you're talking about right now are the same things I've been speaking about and the things that I've been experiencing. So, and many of us have been experiencing. Huh?
The problem with the government, they're not going to help. They say they are. They're not going to help. When I got out, it took 2.5 months to get my food stamps. Thank God I was working with self-awareness and recovery, and we were getting paid through them. But, I mean, $500 a month you can't live on.
Yeah.
So I was glad to be part of the self-awareness and recovery because that's where I should be. It is one of the best groups I've ever been a part of. But, I mean, come on, dude. Danny Silva and Smokey, those two, put them together, there's nothing like it. And, I mean, what they do is amazing. And I got to experience that by being a part of it out there. The government, they'll tell you till they're blue in the gums that they're going to help. And the second you get out, they're going, who are you?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's why I created Legacy. That was my whole thing. I was so angry that they released me homeless and with no resources. And all the all the places that were supposed to help me declined. So I got angry. And so what is your take on reentry going before they get out? How do you think a program can help like that?
I honestly believe that reentry should be for everybody, not just the people who are getting out. It needs to be for these – even the LWOPs, because that's about to change. And they need to know what's out here. They need to know how to reenter. They won't, like out here in Arizona, I can't go into prisons. I can't have anything to do with helping the kids, helping the recently released. That's part of my parole plans or parole conditions. But the second I get off, I mean, even coming back to Sacramento is still on the table because I can go right back to work with SAR. And I can go back into the prisons at that time and start helping, where, in all honesty, I'm needed. I think we're all needed to go back in and show these guys this is how success is done. This is what happens when you take the group serious, because too many people in reentry go in there just to get a chrono or time off. You know that, and I know that.
I was one of them when I started.
Yeah. Yes, you were. But the crazy thing is that I used to see people come in, and I said, I don't care what you guys want, what you guys do here. Just be quiet, put your ass in the chair, pardon my language. And you remember what Dean Knorr used to say?
Yeah, I remember Dean.
Yeah, bring your ass and your mind to follow.
Yeah,
and
I remember that.
So true. And I've used that ever since he got out. I keep using it. I use it in every group that I was a part of. And people would look at me like, what? And I'm like, just trust me. And as time goes on, there's something that is said. And all of a sudden, they look at you and go, oh, my God, that's me. And, you know, you speak life into everything around you. Speak life into these groups. Speak life into the men and women who are in prison and coming out of prison. If you don't speak life into it, you're speaking negative into it, and that's failure.
Yeah. So the program, like, okay, so the reentry, what they prepared you for, is it anything when you got out, were you prepared?
Oh,
anything the prisons?
No, but you got to remember, I'm life without. I was given nothing. I was given no reentry. I wasn't even allowed to help with the reentry. And then when I finally got a date, they said, you're too close to the governor's decision. You can't get in. But the thing is that all those years that we were helping guys with their parole packets, I was learning. I was watching. I was learning. I was building mine, and I built mine around a solid foundation, right? If you don't have that foundation, it's going to crumble. Well, I built the foundation. I knew what I was going to do when I got out. I literally said, I'm going to get a job in the union. Guess what?
Mm.
I got a job in the union. And
nice.
I mean, out in California, you get a job in the union, dude, your prices, the pay is crazy. Well, I came out here to Arizona and I said, I'm going to get a job right away. No, it didn't work that way. I had to sit there and I had to humble myself because I thought that I knew everything. Reentry in prison, they refused at the time to give lifers the reentry. They would give it to guys who had a date, no problem. But if you had that L at the end of your name, ain't going to happen. You remember I think one of the biggest things that Governor Brown looked at was when I tried to get into that, what was that one program that the CC3 started there?
Oh, shoot.
You remember that group?
Yeah, I just can't remember the name right now.
SAT or something like that,
it was
a group for people going home, and it was to get you ready for going home. But he looked at me, and he even put it in writing. He said, "Your life without, get out of here. You'll never get in my group."
Mm.
I think Governor Brown looked at that and said, "You know what? He's right. He's life without. He will never get into this group. So I'm going to make him life with. That way, he can get into groups." Because, see, if you remember, I took every group seriously.
Yeah.
I was not there to play games. I was there to learn. And by me learning, I was hopefully teaching somebody else. Yeah, dude, the reentry was a joke. We were helping guys out on the yard understand how to go get an ID. But I hadn't gotten an ID since 1988. So I had no idea what to do. But, okay, there's books out there. I read them. I listened to people who had just gotten back into prison. Okay, how'd you do it? And they'd run it down. Okay, I understand now.
Yeah.
For men and women just getting out of prison, if you had a driver's license before you went in, go to the DMV and say, I want a renewal. Do not say, I need a new driver's license. Go say, I need a renewal. And they will look you up, and you might have to take an 18-question test. and then you get your driver's license back. It's easy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the stuff they never taught you in there. They didn't teach, they would teach people in there that, hey, when you get out, you're guaranteed to be covered by Medi-Cal. That's a lie. Medi-Cal, to the date as of right now, has never covered me. They refused
to.
Yep. So I ended up getting coverage through my union job. And my union job coverage runs out on July 1st. When my new job, their coverage kicks in. So it's like, all right, I planned it out okay. But you got to remember, write down your goals, follow your goals. That was another big one. And if there's a roadblock gets thrown up in front of you, just go around it. You know, you don't have
to
stop and go back the other way.
Yeah. No, it's funny you say that because, you know, part of my success out here with legacy programs is that, they try to put these roadblocks in front of me and I just find a way around them. I don't know if it's our mentality or something I picked up from prison or just me, but it's just something that I find a way around everything. That they say I can't do something, I try anyways, just another way, right?
Well, look, I got to work with state troopers in my job now, right?
Yeah.
So I'm talking to one of them, and he kept looking at me weird. I said, what's up? And he goes, how much time did you do? I looked at him, I said, what do you mean? And he goes, dude, how much time did you do? I said, why? And he goes, it's the way you talk. You're different. Well, I found out that the way I talk to cops is like I'm still in prison. The homeboy's this, you know, check this out. And he even looked at me and when he heard how much time I'd done and he heard my sentence, his eyes went wide and he goes, dude, I'm always trying to help the kids up in Flagstaff. He goes, can you? And I said, nope. And he goes, why not? I told him, I said, Arizona law, prisoners, ex-prisoners are not allowed to help any kind of youth or formerly incarcerated. That's Arizona law. And he goes, so if I call your parole officer and ask, and he says, yes, will you come up? I said, hell yeah. Dude, I would love to be still helping the kids because they're the ones who are screwing everything up right now.
Yeah.
But it's all
well,
good.
No, it's I hear you. In California, fortunately, they don't have that stipulation. So
no,
I just kind of
that's a good thing.
Yeah,
because you guys are the ones who are going to teach them.
Do you think that formerly incarcerated are the best teachers for us?
Hell yes. I do. Hey, do you know why? LWOPs, there's 66 of us who have been released in California history. Do you know why not a single one of them has gone back?
Why?
We learned our lesson. They took everything from us. See, people who do a little five-year hit, I know I'm going home in 3 years. People who do life without, they have lost everything. They learned their lesson. They're not going to go out and screw up. They're not going to go out and hurt people. They're going to be good citizens. That's what angers me over all this legislation stuff where they're saying, you know, life without, no. Like, that's who you want out. It's all good. All right, man. Hey,
yeah.
I got to run.
Country, it's a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much, man. I love you, brother.
Oh, yeah, man. You be good.
And, we'll be playing later.
All right, cool deal. I'll be online.
All right, brother. I'll see you then. My boy's playing right now, so.
I bet. See you later.
All right, bye, brother.
Bye.
Bye. So, that's my one of my great friends, Country. And like I said, we go back so far, it's ridiculous of, you know, there were so many guys. I was in a high security level 4 for 14 years of my term. And I was around dropout ABs. I was around ex-former mafia members, BGFs. And let me tell you something. Those are some of the greatest examples that have been able to shape my life around. And even though they weren't the greatest examples, they were still the greatest examples, if that makes sense to anyone out there. So it just goes to show how it begins is never how it ends. And that to have somebody from my past that was so, because I was involved in the politics as well, and to be able to have our life now and to be able to refer back to our past and to know the lessons and to sit there and to know what not to do and how to succeed. We're both going back for our brothers and our sisters. And I just love his story. I love how he's one of 66 to get out and be successful. And yet people sit there and say, we're not letting out murderers and all these other people. But the thing is that some of those people have really changed their lives. And I just wanted to bring him in and show a little humanity and shed some light on the what is a life without former inmate look like. You know, if you look at him today, you can't even tell.
You can't even tell. Well, Lawrence, this is your brother. You know, even though we grew up differently and in different moderations of through society, it is a fact that, you know, it's misinterpreted, misunderstood. People, you know, it's unfortunate, but yeah, at the same time, you know, it's a grace, and you're absolutely right. And you know, for your sake of, you know, it's unbearable to understand that, you know, that all the rules and regulations you guys have to follow, and you know, you guys were talking about coming out and trying to get an ID. That's the most, you know, simplest thing to us as society, but when people are incarcerated, it's like, what platform or what direction do you take, and who do you trust? Who do you listen to? What feedback, or, you know, do you still stay in contact with some of the people? You know, do you, what avenues do you take in order to get, you know, like you said, an ADD card or, you know, medical, like you were saying, you know, all those things, it's just, it brings an awareness to saying, like, you know, I can only imagine. Because, like I said, for us, it's everyday situations that we go through. But for you guys, it's not. It's like putting us in an unknown area, being captivity into an unknown space, and, you know, where everything's that organized or not, it doesn't matter. You have no regulations. It's like going into a kitchen trying to cook a meal. You have no idea where a spatula, what is a spatula, where it's at, what its content, what does this tool do? You get distracted. You know, you're curious. Your brain is always thinking. So you go and pick it up. You're like, hey, what is this? But anyway, you don't, you know, for you guys, it's not as simple as people may think. It's not that simple. You know, to get funding, to get avenues, to get people to fund you, people just to hear you out, 5 seconds, 5 minutes of their time would change, you know, it changes a lifetime. It changes a perspective. It changes the way the outlook is. And, you know, happy Father's Day to you and your guest speaker, because, you know, you take on a huge responsibility, and you've already shown you're responsible. You went through a time period, a time capsule of 20 years. You can't gain that back. It's not where you, it's like you say, you know, it's not where you start that matters. It's where you, it's what you, it's where you end. It's what, you know, it's not always starts where it ends, but what I'm trying to say is I'm dyslexic, so I get things mixed up when I speak. I'm sorry. You know, it's a part of my ritual of growing up. My brother and I, we were, you know, inseparable. But for some reason, the law came along and said, you know what? I dub you, and I dub you, and dub me, and you're going to go this way, and you're going to go that way. We got torn apart. We got inseparable. You know. What's that? But anyway,
no.
In Lane's terms, I'm just trying to say is, you know, it's not what you did, it's what you're doing. You know, you're making a difference for these people. You're making a voice be heard. You're making, you know, you're letting people know that you're not alone out there. Things, you know, things may conspire when you're young and you get out of control and you have no, you know, you have, that's just it. You have no control, you know, and and a voice. You're taught one way and you're taught a certain way and you're told to do this and you're told to do that and you follow it. Those are your parents. These are the guidelines. These are the red tape and this is the yellow tape. There was no stopping for you. There was no, you know, guidance. There was no parenting. Shoot, there was a parent. It was the neighborhood. The neighborhood, you know, parented you. And people don't realize that, that it's a huge influence and a huge impact of the people of the world that we watch every day. TV, radio, what is it? Advertisement. If it wasn't for advertisement, nobody would shop. Let's be real. Nobody would go out and buy things. Yesterday, all I could see was everybody was going to my favorite store that I like to go to. And I can't go because, you know what? Money doesn't grow on trees. It doesn't. But, oh, well, you know, life goes on. Yeah. But anyways, love you, bro.
I love you too, man.
I love you too, man.
Anybody else got a comment or question?
Breeze.
Hey, Breezy.
What's up?
Hey, just I want people to understand the life without real quick.
Okay.
I want you to look at it this way. Put your dogs in a corner. Take everything away from it and stand over it and stare at it. How do you think it feels?
Hmm.
Take a human being. Take a human being. Do the same thing. Put them in a corner. Put them in a cage. Stare at them. Threaten them. Take everything away from them. Take their hope away from them. What does that do to them? It turns them into
animal.
What everybody believes. It turns them into an animal.
Hmm.
And an animal will do anything they can to survive.
Wow.
So I want people to understand that's what a life without sentence is. A life without sentence is a death penalty. Don't get it. It is 100% death penalty. It's just the state backing out saying we're not going to be able to kill you.
Hmm.
So they take all your hope. Now it's up to you as a life without. It's up to you to take all that hope back. If you take it back, take back what is yours, and you prove to them that you're worth the hope, that's when everything changes for you. Because the only way you're going to take back is with God. You can try it yourself, and guess what? You're going to fail every time. And there's people out there that don't believe in God. That's fine. But for me, if I did not have that faith in God and Christ above, I would not be here today. I would still be in prison. So just remember that. Put me in the corner and take all of their hope away, take all of their everything away, and they fight. And there's 66 of us who have fought the right way. We fought to get our humanity back.
Can I comment on that?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Who was that speaking? Was that Dan? What is your name again?
Yeah, it's Dan.
Dan, I want to. You just hit it on the nose. That's exactly what goes on in the prisons with those that are serving life without parole, and especially since this pandemic. And I just want to comment on that because I know people who are being caged 22 hours a day in their cell. And this has been going on since last March. And no one, the politicians are just letting it, I mean, as if it doesn't even matter. These people are being treated worse than the animals because at least with dogs and cats, I mean, they get out of their cages more than 2 hours a day. And what you're saying is so true. And I believe that's why there's so many suicides. But I, even myself, I have a loved one serving a life without for a first offense. And since this pandemic, he's been kept in a cage 22 hours a day with nothing, no TV, no books. You know, they took his law books and gave them away to the law library. You know, he didn't do anything wrong, but he did file against the officials a few years back because they've been depriving him of even taking higher educational correspondence courses. They ended up doing some surgery on his shoulder and purposely damaged it permanently by removing part of the collarbone and all of the cartilage. And it didn't have to be removed. I've seen the MRI. This is retaliation. But I agree with what you're saying. I just want to thank you for bringing that out because sometimes people don't believe that these things can happen behind those prison walls until they hear it from people that were there and are no longer there. So thank you for bringing that out.
Yep, no problem. But, you know,
it is the truth, though.
It is the truth because that is what happens. And we have to make the best of what situation is put in front of us. Because if we sit there and we keep acting the way that they want us to act, then we're feeding into the fear. We're feeding into the stereotype. You know, they got that big stereotype about prisoners. Every prisoner is a murderer. Every prisoner is a POS. We're not. There's men and women who are in prison right now who deserve that chance that they are. I mean, if you look right now at the prisons, like the last prison that we were at, I would say 90% of the facilitators in the groups right now, are all life without. We're the ones who are teaching the group because we understand what we've done. We've gone through the work. We've done what it takes to become the human beings that we are. And they're overlooking. They're looking at it going, yeah, you know what, that you're faking. And it's like, no, we're not really faking. We're actually putting a boots on the ground saying, this is who we are.
So wait, all the funding that the states are getting for their rehabilitation, the inmates are running it and not getting paid?
Hey, hang on. There was, GRIP, and there was that one that, what's his name, ran, the CC3 ran. Those are the only two groups that I've ever seen in prison run by staff. Everything else is inmate run. And we do it because we know that there's a problem, and we know that we can help that problem be gone.
So wait, when you went to board, did you get any, besides a chrono saying you facilitated, did you get any credit for running those groups?
Yeah, remember April?
Yes.
She wrote a letter because she actually saw me from the very first day of my rehabilitation. She saw the recovery. And she wrote that letter, and she was telling everything. And then she put in how I was running the groups. And, I mean, it was powerful. And, I mean, even Brown put it in my commutation, what she wrote.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Kind of blew me away. Yeah,
well, I'm just saying that because when I went to board, it didn't matter how many groups I facilitated. I got no credit for it. They sat there and called me a manipulator. So I just wanted to,
I said, You put me back 15 years ago. Yes, I was 100% manipulator. I had no problem telling them that. And I had Minor. Miss Minor?
Yes.
So, I mean, she was thorough. She's not a bad person. She follows the law. I respect her for that. I also respect the fact that if you lie to her, she's going to bury you. And I knew that before I went in. I knew that if I even strayed from the truth one bit, she already knows. Look, every commissioner knows your entire history already. They probably know it better than you.
Yep.
And they'll sit there and they'll see. Well, when she saw that I was not going to lie, her attitude changed. The co-commissioner's attitude changed. And they sat there and they just started going. And then when they saw the April thing, they were like, what the? And they go, why would she? I said, ma'am, because this is who I am now. You always put them as who I was then and who I am now. But you let them know who you are now. You don't let them think about who you were. Let them know who you are now.
Mm.
And never don't lie about it. They already know. They already know everything that you've done in prison. They already know.
Even the when Country Sister says that the stuff that they know better is because they have these things called confidentials. And there's just somebody could randomly write something. If they don't want you to get out, staff, they could just write this kite, which we call, and it's just sitting in a piece of paper with no name on it and sabotaging your release. I've seen it hundreds of times. It happened to Smokey.
Yeah, it did twice.
Yeah.
It happened to Polar Bear.
Because people did not want to see them out.
The Smokey one, there was never anything on that, on any paperwork.
No.
But no, look, hey, I just wanted to touch on that, so I got a jet. You guys be good. Thank you for everything.
Anytime, Country. I love you, bro. Have a good one.
Love you too, man. Bye.
Bye. So that's just a little bit more insight. You know, the whole thing about the prison thing, you know, I get on here every week and I talk about who I am, what I do, and what I've been through. But the fact of the reality is that it's just on a very small scale of what I've gone through. And the reason why I bring on so many people, and I offer, if anyone out there is listening, you want to come on and just share your life. You know, this is the whole point of why I do what I do, is because I want to give people back their voice, I want to give them back their power, and I want to give them their hope. And to be able to have guests on, and thanks to Leona for that, I always appreciate giving people the opportunity to tell their story, because when one person says it, it's like, eh. When two people say it, you're like, okay. And when three people say it, you're sitting there going, it's confirmation. So, you know, the life I've led, you know, I always try to bring on people that's led the same lives or went through the same things. And I want to offer that to all of you guys and women, because I want to bring awareness and education. And not only this isn't just people on here complaining. This is people that have taken that complaint and turned it into motivation and drive. And there's many of us that have gone from nothing to something in one way, shape, or form. And not all of us own our own organizations. Not all of us have really successful jobs. But you know what? We're successful out here with family, friends, and community. And that's what's key is when I talk, community is so huge. Community is a make or break for the person coming home. You know, reach out to the formerly incarcerated. Utilize their skills. Find the hope and feed that hope and let them become something other than just a former inmate or formerly incarcerated. So, but I just wanted to sit there and say that. Any comments or questions, Leona? Any blue lights?
Now we have Brady on the phone, but there is someone else on the phone. 626.
It's me, Christine.
Hello, Christine. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Do you have anything to say?
Not much. I just wanted to reiterate again for our legacy program. We're also Lawrence is a get. Which is usual. We are having Zoom courses along with this program, so people can sign on to that and have a one-on-one to get help for what they need.
I forgot about that. That's another project. That's why I got a secretary.
See, that's just the thing, you guys. Everybody don't realize that, you know, what a secretary does, you know, forget the title secretary. You know, Christine really puts it out there when, you know, she's digging in deep and she works two jobs. She goes to school as, you know, for law, make an effort out there, trying to make a difference, trying to be on standards, trying to make on point, you know, and, you know, I'm telling you, man, she dedicates her time here. And as a husband, I don't really get the time. You know, you talk about incarcerated. Sometimes I feel like I'm incarcerated because I'm trying to, understand all this, you know, for a brother's point of view and a husband, you don't really see everything that goes on or hear everything that goes on. So when you hear stuff, your mind automatically goes into a jump mode or wants to act, wants to react. And it's like, hold up, wait a minute, hit the brakes, slow down a second, and reiterate of what's being done. You know, it's taking that 10 seconds more and allowing the man upstairs to direct everything that's the way it's going. You know, because if it isn't, you know, he's got his hand in that situation too. Because good or bad, his hand's in that situation. That's all I'm saying, you know. And for the people that are out there doing this, thank you. You know, thank you to my wife. Thank you to Sam. Thank you to my brother. Thank you to the people, Leona and the guest speakers, you know. My gosh, thank you. Because without an avenue or this, you know, this whole ordeal would never come together. And it takes a whole community, like you said, Lawrence, to come together and to, you know, teach one. If you have a story out there, like you said, say it. Because you know what? When we were young, we didn't have a voice, bro. We didn't get to – nobody knows about our traumahood times. And you know what? The times that the fridge was, you know, things conspired where, you know, there was no food in the house. We went and did things and avenues and places to be and try to survive. Those were survival skills. Those were our teachings. Those were our survival, you know, Swiss Army knife type thing. You wanted something to eat? We went next door. You wanted a car? Hold on 1 second. Let me go borrow one from the neighbors. They didn't know.
Yeah.
But I'll be right back.
Well, and that reminds me of a funny story is that we used to, growing up with my mother, me and my brother and I, we didn't have any food in the house. And we would, I would go play at a friend's house, unlock the back door, and then make sure the next day I'd go get suspended from school, and then I'd go break into the house and eat all their food. And once I found that out that it worked, and I did this up and down the street, I brought my brother with me, and we would sit there and eat as much as we can for the amount of time that we had. And he almost burned down a house trying to make a cake or brownies or something. And just one of those stories. But so eventually the neighbors, they would it's in the shower. Sorry, that's my boy. So what the neighbors decided to do, there was a few of them that shunned us, and then there was a few of them that knew our situation because our house was not considered go send your kids to go play. So what ended up happening was they started inviting us for meals and stuff like that. So that was one of the ways the community came together and tried to help out the best they could. But the problem is that I didn't know how – my brother and I didn't know how to speak what was going on at home. So we weren't able to tell them that we were being beat and that I was being sexually molested and stuff like that.
Well, no, because we thought that was okay. We were taught that that's okay, that that's what you're supposed to do. We were taught to freaking go out and, you know, with a touch on the shoulder, that was okay. You know, that, but to us, our family members, they didn't say it that way. They told us in a manner where deviancy was okay. They taught us that, you know, in school they teach you, they tell you, and they consequence you, and they suspend you, and they expel you, and then the law gets involved. Because your parents have started something and never corrected it. So we grow up as knowing playing house and doctor, that was nothing. That's like going out and going to buy a car. Pick your car, you know? But that's it. For us, that was like as simple as getting dressed. We didn't know any better. And, you know, you don't know things. You don't realize things until you're, you know, you don't know how to speak, like he was saying. You don't know how to explain it. And some things are not explainable. You can't explain why, you know, which direction, why the wind blows. You can't see it for that matter either. But you know it exists. We exist because a monster out there created this. Okay? It's not something that we are born into. No. It's not something that we created. It's something that we were mindful of and reminded every day. It's like getting beat. It's like, you know, you're forced. And as the guest speaker was saying, stand in the corner. That drew back so many memories. Stand in the corner while you're getting yelled at and beaten.
Can I say something?
You don't have a voice. You don't have hands. You don't have – you can't fight back because you're small. So what do you do? You curl up and you take it. Why? Because they're bigger. They're bigger than you. They're bigger than you. They have a voice. They've been around longer. You just follow in suit. You follow in line. And that's what, you know, you think these people being incarcerated, that's what they need? They need to be locked up? They've already been locked up in their mind. They've already been locked up in their life. They've already felt the treatment. Why more? Why do people out there have to do more? Why do you have to do more damage? Our Congress has to come together. You guys have to fold sometime. Our Congress has to fold because the treatment that you're giving people is not a treatment. It's a punishment.
You know, legislative
and
members.
It's not okay. Go ahead, Leona.
Legislative members are not the answer. I mean, they have a title, and they're sitting up in their big offices, but they're not the educated ones. The educated ones are you. You know, I'm listening to all of you, and life experiences is more education than anybody that went to college, went to university, sitting in high positions could possibly have. You know, your friend Dan talked, and you mentioned it about God. You know, when Jesus came into this world, who did he associate with? He didn't associate with those big shots. He had to correct them so many times because they thought they were better than the people he was associating with. And those people
he associated
with
and ate and drank wine with the sinners.
And they're really in Bible scriptures now, as they're the ones. Now, they talk about, and I say this all the time, prisoners are a stereotype. Prisoners come out, look it, I'm listening to you, I'm listening to, well, Christine, I'm going to leave you out, these are the two men. But I'm listening to Lawrence, I'm listening to Brady, I'm listening to others that come on and they speak with such education. You would not, if they didn't mention that they were in prison, if they didn't mention that they were abused and all these things, just listening to them talk, I would have assumed that they had some college education behind their belts. So the suffering that we go through in this world today gives us that education. We're teaching ourselves. We're teaching our loved ones. Those are the ones that have the education. And they have the real education. Because even a social worker cannot work with somebody unless they have been there and done it. Unless they're married, unless they have children, unless they've been abused, unless they were divorced. On all of these situations, they have to have all of these attributes to be able to work with the people they're working with in order for those people to relate to them and them to relate to them. So I, myself, when I think about the people out in the communities today, look it, we all are forming organizations to help the incarcerated or to help somebody that really needs help. We're not lawyers, but where are the majority of lawyers? Where are the majority of politicians? They're before the media. They're joining these coalitions. They're getting paid by the hour. They're trying to find the easiest way to make their dollars. When they go to college to take up law or to take up politics, to be able to help people that are going through all these things. And yet, they've got that paper, but they don't have that heart. They don't have that motivation to help those that are really in need. And Brady, you and Christine have been coming on to support Lawrence since the day he started doing this. And I admire both of you for it. And you speak with knowledge, you're helping, and you mentioned your wife is just a secretary. Just a secretary, in my heart, in my mind, is somebody that is as important as a political figure. And the audience that's listening, I just want them to know, too, because there's a lot of people on Facebook, in the community. Everybody's listening and everybody's liking and everybody's agreeing. But how many are actually doing something? How many are actually getting something out of all of this to be able to go out there and help someone? They need to educate their politicians because they are citizens. And look at this. We're the only country in the world who has taken away the voting rights of somebody that gets incarcerated. Who in the heck does things like this? Who takes away someone's citizenship? You might as well say that's what they're doing because they made a mistake or they're in prison. And I just wanted to say this because it upsets me so much. The high and mighty in this world, if they put as much effort into praying and into reading Bible scriptures and into trying to figure out how to do the godly things with even those in prison serving life, those on death row, those who have been in prison for years and years, if they put their godly attitudes, these people probably go to church, and they probably don't now, but they probably went to church thinking that they're going to church and they're putting in their bucks and all that, and it's going to make them, it's going to take away them being sinful. But it's the small people that they look down to that God himself looks up to. And those people in the high places that think that they're that important are going to have to go before their maker too. And I just wanted to say that.
No, absolutely. I think that, you know, sometimes I believe out here, even with activists and advocates, especially and these big organizations that are getting all this money, I think that at first, people have the right intentions. And then while through the process and the journey, people forget where they come from. And that's that disconnect. And from a therapeutic standpoint, I could sit there and say their empathetic gate has shut down from some type of event where they can't empathize or sympathize with anybody that they're judging. But I don't know. I think that sometimes the things like money and prestige just really get to people out here. And that's something that those are great examples for me. I really do utilize them, and I appreciate them because I will never be like that. And they remind me every day of why I do the work I do. And, you know, the dedication is there, and they are the constant reminders of this is how it can be. You know, people forget their purpose and their cause when they get caught up in the system throughout the process. But when they start out, it sounds good. And they want to do
but
big
you know what,
and
Lawrence,
good things.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but to add to it, you are the big inspiration. You know, like they say, it's a domino effect. You give a lot of admiration and a lot of inspiration. And I'll tell you a little bit of something real quick where I got my information. You want to be schooled? Go to school. Graduate. Become something. Because everyone's going to tell you you're nothing. But to see the person are the people in your life. My brother has... He doesn't understand. I don't get him to. But I will tell you this. When it comes down to doing certain things in life, you make a prime example, and you show me the light. You shine down bright to a lot of individuals when you seem to want to give up, or you want to call it quits, or you just want to throw your hands up and go back. Don't. Don't believe it for 1 second, because you're the, I said, you're an inspiration to a lot of people. You're a pathway to a lot of people. You have a lot of charisma. You have a lot of, you know, stamina to help those. And I don't ever want you to give up. Don't ever think for a second that life is just ending, that, you know what, things will come up and conspire into your head and try to tell you things and whisper in your ear. Some days, you know, we might be upset at our individuals and our loved ones, or things may happen, or words may be conspired because we don't understand. Family individuals don't understand. Well, let's make them understand. Let's show them. Let's take them by the hand and start over. Let's take each other by the hand and continue to walk that journey, because there's nothing else like it, and you've proved that. You've already proved that. You have nothing to prove to anybody in this world anymore. You have nothing to give to anybody else anymore but your time, and you're doing that.
That's right.
And you've done that. But now it's time to be activated on your terms for you. It's time to be activated, people, to have a voice, to speak up, to speak back, and to act. You can't no longer stand there with your tail between your legs and say, do I jump or fight? You don't have a choice. It's not a choosing matter. Because if that was it, we wouldn't be on this blog talk. We wouldn't be doing this. We wouldn't be shedding light. My brother wouldn't take his time. He's wasted so much time as it is. Why would he waste more time? And you know, it's not. We're not wasted individuals. We're not garbage you just wad up in the corner and throw it away. We've been recycled, people. We've been through the turmoil, and now we're shaking it off.
Yeah.
So, no, you know, like you said, there's people out there. Shed your light. Shed your experience. It's not too late.
No one has gone bad. And I can tell, Brady, you are so proud of your brother. I am proud of your brother, too. Lawrence came out, and I'll tell you, for somebody to come out and do as much as he's done in the short time he's been out, I am very proud of him. So I can imagine what his brother and his sister-in-law are thinking about. What an inspiration, Lawrence. You have brought so much sunshine, so much shedding light is just what you've been bringing to a lot of your guests and everything else. You know, sometimes that's what it's all about. We wonder why we're suffering in life. No one was born bad, so God had a purpose. And that saying goes, he didn't bring us this far just to leave us. So everything you're doing is his purpose for you. Be proud of yourself.
Oh, I am. I appreciate it. And I'm very humbled. And thank you, everybody, for your kind words. One of the things that I've learned, one of my greatest lessons that I did not know until I had to experience it, was when I got out and I was given my voice back. Leona was the first person to come out and just right away, come on this Sunday. And it's been nonstop ever since. And let me tell you that from that seed for everybody that's listening. I started doing a show on legacy programs on Facebook. And I went from doing Cell Life to doing all these different podcasts and these shows and shedding light as much as I could. And I understood the power that I had and I was so grateful and I felt empowered again. And so what I did was I produced a 7-day show on legacy programs, education and reentry and services. And I brought everyone I interviewed, I said, hey, how about be a host? And many of them were like, no, I'm good. I don't want to, you know, I don't have anything to say. And I was able to build them up. And today, you know, it's a very successful show. I mean, we cover everything from mental health. There's 7 days and there's 6 hosts. So, I mean, that's what I've been able to take from just one act of kindness from Leona and been able to spread it. And then now they're empowered and they're doing their own thing now. So it's almost like the philosophy of what Anthony was talking about last week was each one get one, and that's what I've been able to do. I've just been able to get several, and I'm very grateful to be in this position, and just forever humbled that I'm in the position that I am. So I just want to thank everybody.
We want to give God the glory. We want to give God the glory because it was nothing I had to do with it. God is he's putting everybody in a position right now, in their position, because this world is dying. We are living in a dying world. And it says in the Bible scriptures, we should be able to tell the signs of the time if we can tell when there's going to be a storm. Everything around us indicates that this whole chapter is coming to its final end. And he's putting everybody in place, trying to give people one last chance to make it right. So a lot of these people that are listening, a lot of these people in the world, that think that they don't have anything to talk about, they better think twice because there's a lot to talk about. There are people suffering all over the world. There are people who are starving. There are people who are being violated. There are people who are being abused, deprived, provoked, harassed. There are people who are being tormented and tortured. There are people who are kept in cells 24 hours a day. Some don't even get a chance to come out. There are people that are even in their homes that are being beaten, domestic violence, whatever it might be. There's too much going on in this world today. And God has given us a chance to try to make it right. So Lawrence, when you talk, when anybody else talks, even with Anthony when he was talking last week, when people talk about the need to make change, the need to come together and help one another, the need for change, and one of them, I think it was Dan, said, with this whole thing about division in this country and racism in this country and hatred, these are all things, to me, that doesn't put a smile on anyone's face. So why is it happening? When you're doing good for somebody and you're doing good for the world or for the country or for your neighbor or for yourself, you feel really good about it. You feel like you've accomplished something. Every day that I wake up in the morning, I always say, I have to, by the end of the day, I want to be able to say I achieved something with my time for that day. And the media, when they talk, unfortunately, the media doesn't have enough sense to know that people in uniform and with titles are just as, that they can be just as criminal-like as the people that they find fault with, because those people have either stumbled, they're in prison, or they've done something wrong in their past. The media talks about fishes. They talk about dogs. They talk about everything, about their clothing, about their hairdressers, about themselves. But the news that really needs to be put out there is letting people know who is out there that really needs help, whether they're incarcerated, whether they're sick, whether they're without food, without shelter, without clothing. These are the people that they need to be talking about. So some godly people listening to them might want to help. And we're so focused on power, those in power and those in uniform and those having titles and those who went to college and universities, everybody's so focused on that that they're forgetting the ones that are really educated. And those are the ones that are doing the training right now. Those are the ones that are trying to bring everybody together to work in unity. Those are the ones that are talking about their brothers, how proud they are of their brother or sister because their brother came out of all of this, or they came out of all of this abuse at home as children. They went through the abuse. They ended up suffering in some way or another. They either ended up having a bad marriage, or they ended up going to prison, or they ended up doing something. But yet they came back stronger than ever. And what do? They put together things like Each One Teach One and the Legacy Program. And they got secretaries that maybe think that they're not important, when that secretary is most important, because that secretary is holding everything together. So I just want everybody in the audience to know, the educated ones, the ones that I'm proud of and the ones that I want to be a part of and the ones that I want to follow, are the ones with the last name Drink or Sparky Lee or Brady. Those are the ones that I want to be a part of, because those are the ones that make the most sense. I could give a hoot about money. I had a home. I ended up giving that up. I ended up giving up everything that I had. And what I didn't have got taken from me by people I trusted. So we live in a country that's so, everything is a lack of trust. But I don't miss any of it. I don't miss any of it. These rich people want all of this rich, all the riches, but they can lose it in a minute. I remember years and years ago on Cape Cod in Yarmouth, Massachusetts, there was a selectman who committed suicide. He lived in Yarmouth. He committed suicide because he had to file bankruptcy, couldn't cope with it. Some people are so used to the money and fame and power that they're not used to it when they leave it or lose it. And that's why I say, even with prison issues, everybody says, oh, this doesn't happen in our community. No one knows when lightning is going to strike. I never thought it would happen in my community. And I was on Cape Cod, born and raised, and I never thought we would go through this. Tragedies happen. It's like lightning. It can strike anyone, anywhere, anytime. So all of these Mr. and Mrs. Do-Goods, they better keep it in mind, because someday it might happen to one of them or their own family members just because they judge too quickly.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And you know, there's let me tell you something. If for anyone out there thinking that I'm making big dollars, there's no money in advocacy. It's all for your purpose and your cause. We do not get paid for this. So, you know, when you see your advocate, you see him on Facebook or you see him in person, see him or her, you know, thank them for what they do and appreciate what they do, because they are doing a job that is, it has no, there's not even a full-time job where you get paid for, you know, 60 hours a week or 80 hours a week. this is a 24/7 thing. I can't tell you how many times I've had to take a phone call when I'm with my family or where I'm spending time with my son and I have to take a phone call, and I don't get paid for that. You know, it's all for the satisfaction of doing what I'm supposed to do, what I was meant to do, and where I'm being driven to do it at. So, you know, like Leona says, I thank God for everything that I've been able to do out here. And I believe this. I believe that there's no experience and nothing goes wasted with God. I believe that if I had to do 20 years again to do what I do, I would do it again. No doubt. I would be glad to, because I feel that my rewards are going to be bigger where I'm going than just on earth. And and that's why we do what we do. So all the advocates out there, and I just want to give, because we're coming up on the end of the show, check out legacyprograms.net for anybody that wants to get involved or just support. We accept donations. We accept all the help that you can give, either by speaking, by any way possible. We do not discriminate. Also, you could check us out on Legacy Programs on Facebook. Also, Our Legacy, Each One, Teach One. We do interviews, and we give insight onto how the mentality and how we think, how we act, and it just gives answers for people that are dealing with family members that are going through this. And we also offer a mentor program for those that are going through what I've been going through. So, and we also do the Zoom, and you could get a one-on-one. Just go to the website and sign up. And like I said, I wouldn't be able to do anything that I could do that I'm doing right now without the people around me. So I want to give a special shout out to all of you out there, especially to my sister-in-law for the work that she does. And my brother for the support, and just all my friends and family that just inspire me to keep doing more and more. And also check out New Vision Organization out in Massachusetts. They are a good organization. I am also part of that. So, you know, feel free to help out any way you can. Drop your email. You could also donate as well. And we are currently looking for a lawyer to, once again, we're looking for a lawyer to investigate into the prison mistreatments of inmates, and we need a pro bono lawyer to start looking around to specifically address the mistreatment and the physical beatings that's going on behind those walls that's being unheard and unseen. So, Leona, you got anything to add?
I want to
don't forget
you,
your wife. I want to say thank you.
On your website, do you have a volunteer a place where volunteers can actually go on and sign up or send you an email saying that they want to volunteer with you?
Yes, they do.
Okay,
yes,
so
we do.
They can just go here and fill out the form on your website.
Yes, there's a form there where they can put their email, their phone number, any type of comment, if it's in regards to like a donation or if they want to help sign up as a speaker, a guest speaker, or if they just want to volunteer their time to anything, it'll go straight to my email to where Lawrence is a part of, and so that way we're both reading it and making sure that we're staying in contact, 24/7, because we're always here for everybody, no matter what the situation is.
Okay,
and every state.
Can you repeat the name of the link to your website?
It's on the legacyprograms.net.
Legacyprograms.net. Okay.
And then also,
forms all over on the website to the Zoom, to the mentors, to being in contact. So.
Yeah, it's under what we do, right? In contact.
It's under what we do, take action. There's a list of things of the programs that we have on where you can click on about, and it'll just transfer you over to all the needs that we provide and all the links. Your Facebook is on there, LinkedIn, everything.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
If you type in Lawrence Drank on the internet, and everything that Lawrence is doing, everything comes up. Lawrence, you've made quite a history on the type your name in on the internet browser, and everything comes up. Founder, owner, Legacy Programs Education, Sunday's host, Lawrence Drank, and guests speak out on Lawrence Drank and Tommy Rock, juveniles to adult prisons, you crime records and information of inmate Lawrence Drank. It's got the YouTubes. It goes on and on and on. So if anybody has a problem getting on their website, all they need to do is type in the name.
Oh, yeah. And he's
making waves. Well, and that was one of the things when I got out. I didn't want to be known just for my crime that I was falsely convicted of. I wanted to make sure that I was known for something good in my community. And that's been my drive ever since, that I'm always, you know, it's not, if I have 10 good things about me and one negative, I mean, it should be all right. But I just want to give my community, my family, and my friends, and my purpose the best that I can offer. And so, like I said, we have so many projects coming up right now. We're getting in transitional housing and going back in the prisons. I'm going in as a chaplain this time. So, and I'm just forever grateful and humbled of the abilities that I have that have been given to me to go forward in a sense. That is, they told me originally that I would never get to where I'm at today. I've been told that since 9 years old. And to be the success that I am because of the people around me and because of my faith, I'm very grateful and forever humbled. And I just want to say to everybody out there that, you know, I am a different kind of founder. I'm a different type of CEO. You can contact me directly. When I always sit there and say, you know, you should know where you're putting your money at. And when you put your money with Legacy, it's a good cause. And when I say that, you know, you shouldn't have to go through a secretary or anything like that, let me tell you something. Everybody goes through my secretary to get to me, and she directs it. And what I meant by that statement last week and the week before is that you should always have the ability to speak with the founder or CEO or whoever you're putting your money towards. So I encourage everybody, all the donors out there, know where your money's going. If you cannot get a hold of the founder in one way, shape, or form, or if you're put on hold, something is wrong. So please explore that. And I just want to say a special shout out for Father's Day again to all the fathers behind the walls, to all the mothers out there that are doing the father's jobs because the fathers aren't there. Congratulations, and just appreciate everything you're doing. This day is for you as well. So I just want to put that out there. So I love you guys. This show's about to end. Anybody else got any more any comments? I think we got about 2 minutes. Leona, you want to end the show?
Yes, I just want to let everyone know that you can come on every Sunday at 3:30. p.m. Eastern Time, 12:30 p.m. Pacific Time, every Sunday afternoon to listen to Lawrence Drank, also as Sparky D, founder of the Legacy Program and Each One Teach One. And we also have on with him Christine and her husband Brady. They come on every week. They support and they work with Lawrence Drank. Lawrence, thank you so much. We're going to be closing out, everyone. Please join Lawrence Drank and his guest next Sunday afternoon. Thank you so much, and we will be closing out now. It's all on
Absolutely.
You.
Thank you.
God bless y'all. God is great.
Right on, bro.
Love
Amen.
Y'all. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.